the 40th anniversary of that. Then 5 years later, and it's great to see Stuart Brand in the room here, who when he was running the Whole Earth truck store and catalog right across the street from SRI, where Doug Engelbart was doing his stuff, actually was one of the cameramen for this incredible demo that Engelbart did in San Francisco in 1968. I'm just going to show you a couple of excerpts here. So this is the setup that he had. This is a picture that was taken in the 60s. It looks completely modern. This is why I think Engelbart is the true father of personal computing, because what we call, so sound please. Sound.
So here, I'm afraid I'll need to... So I can say, all right, I'd like to go to produce, but I'd like to go to produce, they get big, I'd like to say one branch only, and let me look just that low, and I see it. Oh, I can say, I'd like to see one line only. I can see it. But there's another thing I can do. There's a root I said I have here. So here, I'm afraid I'll need a different picture of the view. So here's what I drew with a picture drawing capability here. It's a slight map if I start from work, and here's the route I seem to have to go to pick up all the materials. And that's my plan for getting home tonight. But if I want to, I can say, the library, what am I supposed to pick up there? I can just point to that, and oh, I see, overdue books and all. Well, there was a statement there with that name on it. Go back. What am I supposed to pick up at the drugstore? I see, very interesting. All right. Market can do things if I want to. Just say, I'd like to interchange produce and canned materials. Bingo. And they're all numbered rightly if I care to look. Interchanging them very quickly. Cans are going to get interchanged with produce. They do it and all gets renumbered. Set it up so I see it over like that. That leaves a corner up there, and I say, now computer, do the automatic switching that'll bring in a camera picture from the camera mounted on his console, such as the camera mounted on mine is. Hi, Bill. That's great. Now we're connected audio. You can see my work, you can point at it, and I can see your face, and we can talk. So let's do some collaborating.
Go off to a directive file and see what the directive is to get Roman numeral page numbers. I'm into the file now. Here's the first level of the hierarchy. Let's open up page formatting. We want page numbering, so we'll open that up. We find, yes, here it is, Roman numerals. We find out the directive. Yep, your bug's right on it already, Doug. Here's the directive we want. So we work down quite a way into a hierarchy, as you can see.
Use it for when they're conferencing in a room. They'd each have their monitors in front of them. They'd have their shared cursors on the screen. And this is part of the way of life back at SRI in 1968. Perfectly possible to do it for the last 20 years, obviously. Okay, so for me, very quickly, 66, I ran into Sketchpad and Simula, and I had a biological background, and that led to the idea of dynamic objects. I started working on a desktop machine, looked like this. It's a picture of it on its own display. A little bit later, I was influenced by this incredible pen-based system, 1968 at RAND. Take a look at this.
First, we erase a flow arrow, then move the connector out of the way so that we may draw a box. The printing in the box is being used as commentary only in this case. The box is slightly too large, so we may change its size. Then draw a flow from the connector to the box. Attach a decision element to the box and draw a flow from it to scan. We then erase the flow arrows attached to the process post new area and move the box to a new position. This allows us to draw a new box.
So 1968, you might wonder why can't we do that on our handhelds? This, and the reason is that nobody is even thinking about this stuff. Of course we want to do stuff like that. By the way, that recognizer, which was done by Gabe Groner in 1966, was better than Rich Graffiti is today. It's written up in a paper for anybody who wants to read it. But of course, our field doesn't read anymore, do we? So also in 68, I saw the first flat screen display and Seymour Papert. And Papert had started working with children and discovered that children could actually learn differential geometry. So go forward five, turn five over and over again, gives you a nice little circle in Gaussian differential geometry. And that led to this idea that someday in the future, children would actually learn powerful ideas by building them themselves. To know the world, one must construct it. They learn it on these laptops that would be connected with wireless, and they make their own games of space. Now, 50 years from now, this is not going to be a weird picture to show. But in fact, there's been almost no effort of any kind by the general industry to try and, we've already gone through a couple of generations of kids without teaching them anything, even since the commercialization has happened. So we've got adults using computers today that are barely more able than they were 20 years ago. So if you look at this thing from a longer, wider point of view, the thing to do is to put a lot more effort into the systems that we do with children. Because children are the only people on Earth right now that do two-handed interfaces, like Engelbart did. Right? Okay. And the main reason I show this is just to commemorate the 30th birthday of the Alto done by Chuck Thacker here that is kind of the prototype for most modern personal computing. For us, the Alto was a chance to get computers down in schools, and this problem of building interesting environments for children turned out to be by far the most difficult part of this problem. Okay, so here's some examples from today about what children do. I'm just going to do one little example here to show you the kind of programming that children do. The typical first thing they do is to, because they want to learn how to drive cars like adults do. So we say, okay, design yourself a little car and that you would like to learn how to drive, and just paint it in here. Both boys and girls like big, powerful off-road tires. This is a very typical example. Because remember, not all children, just like not all adults, are actually interested in ideas. Many children really want to just prove that they're worthy to exist in the world. They feel unpowerful. They want to prove that they're powerful. They want to play role-playing games and so forth. So, little object here, we can look inside of it, and the kids like this view of the object. We want them to love this view. Rename it car here. Car's heading says zero. I'll click on the carrot here. The number counts up. We can see the car turning. And conversely, if I manipulate the car, you can see that number going positive and negative there. Behavior, car forward by five. Each time I click on it, it goes forward. Car turn, each time I click on it, it turns. If I want a script, I just drag out a tile, makes me a script, and click on the clock, and I've got a parallel script running. And in fact, I can steer the car by just clicking in here, and it's being recompiled dynamically as I change the things in here. Okay, that's sort of like kissing your sister, though, because what you really want to do is to do something like a steering wheel. So you paint a steering wheel. It's the same kind of thing as was before. I'll open it up and I'll call it wheel. And it's got a heading. If I turn it, see it goes positive and negative. I just saw the positive and negative numbers down here influence the car. That's an invitation to pick up the name of the numbers coming out of the wheel and just drop them in here. And now maybe I can drive the car. Now, this is kind of an interesting example of, well, what's the difference between this and the programming we do? Right? Why shouldn't all programming be like this? Good question to ponder on. Okay, so let's see some of the things that we do with this. Here's kids dealing with the physical world. We bring in a bunch of objects of different weights.
Objects that you think will fall to the earth at the same time.
So every class that has about 30 kids in it has one Galileo. This one was a little girl. Cut right to, she realized, nobody can click on and click off the stopwatch accurately enough because we don't know when the janitor is dropping the thing. So why not just drop them in pairs and listen for the result, which is basically what Galileo did. So the real way to understand what's going on here is to use a consumer video camera and just video what's going on. Even that's difficult to see. But because this is a dynamic media system with a uniform object model, we can just pull frames out of the movie, and so we can stack every fifth frame side by side, for example. We can stack them up vertically like that. And what the kids do is they start measuring from the bottom of the ball on one frame to the bottom of the ball on the next frame by just stretching these rectangles here. Like that, and then if you just stack these guys, so the heights of the rectangles are actually the measure of the velocity. And this looks like the velocity is changing by roughly a constant amount. And a little script for our simulated ball here says, let's take a variable called speed and increase it by minus 5 each time. So that's our constant acceleration. And then let's change the ball's position, vertical position, by that speed each time. And by the way, let's try playing it against, I'm going to stop right there and let Tyrone tell you what he did.
And to make sure that I was doing it just right, I got a magnifier, which would help me figure out if the size was just right. After I'd done that, I would go and click on the little basic category button, and then a little menu would pop up, and one of the categories would be geometry, so I click on that. And here it has many things that have to do with the size and shape of the rectangle. So I would see what the height is. And I kept going along the process until I had them all lined up with their height. I subtracted the smaller one's height from the big one to see if there was a kind of pattern anywhere that could help me. And my best guess worked. So in order to show that it was working, I decided to leave a dot copy so that it would show
so it drops the little cookies.
The exact right speed and acceleration.
To show it matches up with the video taken of the real ball. Here's another one where we run the simulation and the movie together, which is kind of fun. By the way, this understanding how this works is something that 70% of college students never get through successfully. So this is a good example of how point of view is worth 80 IQ points. Changing the context, changing the math, changing the way it's thought about, changing the way you make models has an incredible difference as to what you can do. We can thank Seymour Papert for many of these insights. Once you've captured gravity, you can put it on interesting objects, like a spaceship. And so you really want a motor. So gravity is a velocity eater, a motor is a velocity producer. This little script makes a flame when the motor is on, and this is the one that crashes you if you're landing too quickly. So you see, I can toss the ship up here. Land it carefully. And you can go much further than that. So here's a little spaceship from Space War game. And I can get another one by just copying it here. Just trying to show you what these programs look like. This is the thing for Space War right there. Put these ships in here. Let's change the color of this one. Let's turn them on. This is kind of what we were thinking about. Stuart should find this interesting because this is a theme that he and I have been talking about for many, many, many years. Okay, let's shift gears to something a little more biological, which is feedback. Here's a little script I think you can all see. It's fun doing this with programmers in the room because I don't have to explain this. Just read it. So the goal here was to make a car, a little robot car that would stay in the middle of the road. And this is the result, the solution of these two 11-year-old girls. So the idea is only go forward when you're sensing the blue color. Notice it stopped when it hit one of the curbs. Turn one way or the other when you hit either of the curbs. So it can negotiate any turn. They realized that if they drew the road poorly and all of these things were firing off, it would still work because the +4 and the -4 would cancel each other out. So this is a beautiful little solution. This is done by these kids after about 6 weeks of one day a week learning this stuff. The It's quite shocking to see what children can do. So here's how you do animation. You make a bunch of drawings, drop them into the holder. The little program is holder's cursor increases by one. What if I increase it by two? What if I increase it by 0.5? You've learned about rates and sampling. And then we're changing the costume of the ball. And if you combine that with the feedback and look at brightness, then you can do a salmon swimming upstream. So the salmon is trying to find the darker water, which represents a higher concentration of the perfume. And when it loses it, it's circling to find it. So it's chugging along here. And the clownfish uses the very same technique to follow the circular gradient given off by the sea anemone that it acclimates to. And if you take that idea and put it in the micro scale with a particle system like Star Logo, this is called Star Squeak, you can do ants. So we have 10,000 patches underneath here. They're all computing simultaneously to do the diffusion of the pheromones given off by the individual ants when they find the food. And when an ant wanders into the gradient and it doesn't have food, it goes upstream to find the food. And once it has food, it follows another gradient to find the nest. This is a wonderful thing for teaching children about systems. And I wish executives would understand it a little more also. Because you can see how simple local organizing principles can organize almost the entire system without requiring any direct communications. This is a loose coupling model. And there are more important things that children can learn about. For instance, they can learn about epidemics, such as the SARS thing or AIDS. This is a little two-line program here. And these are just like the little cars infecting each other. Here's the survivor. But it's never been the case. So most infections